We've heard plenty about the girl crisis, but is there a boy crisis? If there is, what's causing it? And how do we resolve it?
Today on Real Family Talk, we'll talk about the current state of boys in our society and why we need to better understand them before we can help them. Join us. According to a report by the OECD, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, boys are underperforming girls on average in developed countries. Other recent studies show that by age 8, boys lose motivation and fall behind in school and get discouraged.
When it comes to self-confidence in children and teens, the focus is typically on girls. But it seems that our boys are in crisis and need to be nurtured, too. Here to discuss this boy crisis is Dr. Alina Baltazar. Dr. Baltazar is a Master's in Social Work Program Director and Associate Professor in the School of Social Work and Director for the Center of Prevention Education at the Institute for the Prevention of Addictions at Andrews University. She has 3 boys and 1 husband. Welcome, Dr. Baltazar.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So let's get right to it. So tell us more about the boy crisis and what is causing it.
Well, I'll tell you, the title that you'd mentioned, you know, The Boys Crisis, it's actually a book by Warren Farrell and Dr. John Gray. As a mom of 3 boys, I wanted to know more about this. And as a clinician, I also do psychotherapy a few hours a week. And I wanted to know how better to help my teenage clients, male clients. And of course, we on the news, I mean, you can't not notice that there's a boy crisis if you really think about it. When you see the news, the mass shootings, they're committed by boys, by young men, struggling young men. And then what's more hidden is suicide. There's an awareness that there's a mental health crisis. But when it comes to suicide, rates are increasing for boys and girls. But you know what? It's boys and men who are actually more likely to die from suicide because they're more likely to use a lethal means of a gun, more so than what women might. So there's a mental health crisis. There's a violence crisis. And then, of course, educational, like you mentioned, they're struggling educationally in all areas, really. And it's great that our girls are doing better. Awesome. I mean, as a woman, I'm thrilled, obviously. But then we shouldn't do these things at the expense of our boys. And so that's what we need to do in order to actually better. We need to actually be more aware of what we can do to better address these issues.
So it's really important that you've raised these issues and the correlation you're making between the levels of suicide and the male gender, boys and men, and more likely to have access to firearms. And so whatever happens becomes more detrimental. That's an interesting correlation.
Yeah. So tell us, what do you think comes first, though? Because, you know, the studies are showing that from as early as age 8, we see our boys struggling in school. What do you attribute that to? You know, when we talk about their low motivation and their low grades, you know, what exactly is going on with boys? Where are we missing what are we missing here with raising our boys?
Well, there's a couple of different things. I mean, the women's liberation movement has been wonderful for women. It says should not be at the expense of our men. What feminism is about is equal treatment, right? So the change in the roles for men and women has made it harder for men to kind of find a purpose. They used to be the breadwinners, the protectors of the family. They don't really have that anymore. Their role hasn't been assigned to them like in previous generations. So then that can lead to struggle with motivation. They don't have the motivation to succeed financially or to be successful in order to provide for a family. It's just more like, oh, it'll feel good. And doing things for ourselves just isn't as strongly motivating. Another big issue is one out of four of our boys are growing up without a father figure at all, not even a biological father, a stepfather, or even adopted father, one out of four. So those are the main issues. Us building up our girls is in some ways harming our boys. And then also part of what women's liberation has done is made women believe they may not need a husband to raise children, or they feel more liberated to leave problematic marriage. And then think that, and then courts are more likely to award custody to a female and to the mom. And then maybe kids only see dad every other weekend, which then in my experience as a clinician, I see how it harms the relationship these kids have with their fathers. And they eventually kind of just lose touch with them and don't want to see them by the time they reach adolescence. So those are the two main ones that I have seen.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that, as we underscore the women's liberation movement, empowering women to the detriment of boys. While we are happy to see women empowered and our girls do well, we don't want to see that at the expense of boys. And then, of course, the absence of fathers in the home, which is a big deal. And as you've already mentioned, Dr. Baltazar, with the high rate of divorce and with women in the job market being able to provide for themselves, the old landmarks that we used to have and the old conventions of women getting married to be taken care of and to take care of a home are no longer operative, because what's happening now is that they can get their own job and they can bring home the bacon and they can fry it up in the pan and they can do their own thing. Of course, we're not suggesting that anyone here on the show will be frying up bacon, but it's the saying. You know, they talk about it that way.
The stripples.
There you go.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm particularly struck by this whole notion of lack of purpose. And so it seems to me that do we then need to change the way that we're raising our boys then from very early on? So that there's a different understanding, because we definitely don't want women to go back, you know, to go backwards. I mean, some things I believe do need to change, but you know, how do we make it so that we instill in our boys a purpose?
Right. So that's what we need to do in raising our boys a little bit differently, is to help fill this purpose void. And so again, it's not the obvious one now, and that's good, right? It's not chosen for them. They need to choose their purpose. Of course, then that's a little more of a trial and error thing as parents, to actually encourage them in their hobbies, their interests, finding something that's important beyond just themselves. I mean, that's a developmental milestone when they start caring about others. And that's the beauty of the Christian church, that we actually can give them many opportunities to serve others in mission trips, volunteering with Pathfinders, moving along in Pathfinders and being a teen in training. There's a lot of different opportunities for our boys to find purpose in church, and also sports and in hobbies where they can have opportunities for leadership, develop self-confidence. There are actually definite ways we can help our boys find a purpose.
Excellent. Basically, what I'm hearing you say is purpose. They must have some purpose. After a short break, we'll talk more with Dr. Baltazar. Stay with us.
We're back to talk more with Dr. Alina Baltazar about the boy crisis. So I'd like us to talk a little bit more about what's happening with our boys in regards to ADHD, Dr. Baltazar. Tell us a little bit more about how that's impacting our boys and this crisis.
So yes, boys are more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD. Boys are more likely to be hyperactive and, you know, act out in school. Girls do get diagnosed. It's just presents a little bit differently in girls. And, you know, we do wonder if there is an overdiagnosis of it. In other words, is this boy having a hard time sitting in school because he's just not ready to be in a classroom for 6-7 hours a day? He needs to be outside exploring and learning in a more hands-on way. And so then they're labeled, right? They're diagnosed with having this problem and even labeled sometimes by the teachers as being a bad kid. And they internalize that, right? They internalize this of being a problem kid, being a bad kid, needing medication possibly to be able to function. And then, of course, they compare themselves to their peers. And, you know, they notice they're getting into trouble more and it's embarrassing. And they notice they're, you know, getting their school work in late. So, it impacts self-esteem.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting that you say that because our son, when he was in kindergarten, he, you know, they would have these little rewards at the end of the week, you know, depending on how good you were, you know, if you stayed in your seat, if you didn't talk out of turn. And I remember him coming home one day and saying, "Mom, I'm never going to get the treat at the end of the week." And I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, the teacher asked a question today and he knew the answer and he blurted out. She asked, you know, what were the properties of dew or something like that, whatever it was. And he said, "Oh, it's condensation." Now, of course, as a parent, I'm pretty proud. My 5-year-old is, you know, saying the word condensation. But he was reprimanded for having the right answer. And I understand that, you know, he should have raised his hand, but he was also 5 years old. And so I'm wondering how much of it is actually ADHD, how much of it is just, as you said, that boys are a little bit more active than girls, and how much of it is the femininity of the teacher and a preference for girl-like behavior versus boy-like behavior.
So that's actually a good point. In my research on this topic, that was mentioned. I mean, a vast majority of teachers are women. And obviously, I'm a female educator. And, you know, the way we approach education is we want cooperation, more likely to encourage discussion. And boys are more likely to benefit from competition and from practical application to do. And the way to learn is to do, so that hands-on kinesthetic learning. And so it's not unusual for our boys to struggle in these very structured, cooperative discussion type of education. So I keep that in mind as an educator myself, to do more of a hands-on, practical kind of application. I don't know how to do the competition part in college, but I know I definitely used it with my boys to get them to be motivated to clean their rooms, for instance. Who's going to clean first? Who's going to get ready for bed first? They can thrive on competition that you often don't see in the educational setting.
So I am wondering here, just wondering out loud as I'm thinking about the story Elaine just shared with you about our son Julian many years ago, when he was 5 years old, and wondering if there's anything being done to do in-service training for teachers, especially female teachers, and for them to have more of a consciousness of what's happening with our boys and the fact that they're different than girls and sometimes a little bit more disruptive. That's just the nature of boys. Is there anything that's being done in the educational system, in our systems around the country, around the world, to pay keen attention to the differences between boys and girls and how to do respond to boys in a way that's affirming rather than in a way that's punitive and puts them off?
Well, I'm not aware of any organized effort, so that's why it's important for all of us educators to self-educate ourselves and look for opportunities that are out there. As I said, The Boy Crisis is an excellent book to read, and I'm sure there's information that is out there in addition to that. But also just educating yourself on just mental health in general in our children and understand some of the struggles our boys are facing. Again, suicide, right? The rates are so high for our boys because they don't want to talk. They don't want to open up. So educating yourself on mental health issues as well. So to help them feel more comfortable talking to you where you feel like he is understood.
Excellent. So that segues into the whole notion of self-esteem and how we treat them, how we reprimand them or criticize them. How does that play into self-esteem, and what should we do to help build their self-esteem?
Remember when our kids were little, if you've ever been around little boys, they cry just as much as girls, right? But then at some point they get this message that they're not supposed to cry. They're not to show emotion. And then we also get this impression that they don't need that encouragement, that they're they're smart and they're independent. I made that mistake with my oldest one, not realizing he's just as sensitive as the younger children. It's just at some point they get quieter and they don't really talk about it. And they may act out and get in trouble as a way to express their emotions. We see them as being rebellious or talking back. What we need to do instead is to encourage our boys, understand them. I mean, there's this fear as a mom raising three boys that I knew that I needed to make sure that they weren't going to go out and perpetrate harm to women. And so I was so overly concerned about them being kind and considerate. And I didn't understand the teasing that guys often do amongst each other. So to understand, listen, when they say, oh, it's okay, it doesn't bother us, to listen, understand, realize some guys are going to be more athletic and other boys are going to be less athletic. And that's okay, to help them figure out who they are and to find out where they fit in these roles that aren't as clear as they used to be. But they can find, again, that's the beauty of the freedom that they have now. Another thing that really helps is making sure they have good role models. And even if they have a great relationship with their father, and especially if they don't, they can really benefit from mentors that are out there. There's so many opportunities for mentors that are out there in Pathfinders, youth leader, teachers, coach, if they're involved in sports. And my husband even mentioned his father died when he was 21. His boss, when he was working as a teenager and young adult, actually was the first person he told after his father died beyond his family. And his dad and his boss was like, yeah, it's going to be hard. You're not going to feel that drive to please your father, for your dad to be proud. And he helped them acknowledge that the real loss that he had. So even the boss can be a wonderful mentor to our boys to help them build their self-esteem and their self-confidence.
Absolutely. Well, when we come back from a short break, Dr. Baltasar will continue sharing about how we can nurture our boys and help build their self-esteem. Stay with us. We've been talking with Dr. Alina Baltasar about the challenges of raising boys in today's society. You have some solutions that can be implemented today. Tell us about the importance of family dinners in the context of helping boys.
So family dinners is such a simple, easy way to address so many of the social problems our children face today, boys and girls. Research has found that regular family dinners decreases drug and alcohol use, early sexual behavior, and we did research recently that even found it decreases the chance of your child being a bully, being bullied, so being a victim. They're even more likely to wear seatbelts, more likely to wear helmets when they ride their bikes, and it's amazing the benefits of family meals. Now, I know it can be hard to fathom, especially as our kids get older, how do we fit in the time, especially when kids get busy with other activities. Try to find a time that works for the family. And occasionally, you may have a missing family member, you know, if dad works late on Tuesday kind of thing, or if one child has an activity. But try to have as many family meals as can. In fact, the more you have each family dinner, each one that goes up in the week, you're more likely to actually see more benefit, up to 5 times a week. So at least have 1 or 2 good quality sit-down, long discussions where it's like an hour, even an hour and a half. So this was recommended by the book in Boys Crisis to have at least 1 or 2 solid. And of course, Sabbath dinner is a great time to have that after church. You know, it's a good meal and people are typically in a good mood. Now, we don't want to be judgmental when we're having these discussions with our kids. We don't want them to feel bad. We also want to help them feel included. So you can have maybe a discussion topic as to, well, what would be a reasonable consequence to not doing chores? Or is college really important in today's society? So having kind of a discussion topic and making sure you're checking in with each child. But again, hold judgment. Try to be supportive and encouraging. So we want these family meals to be enjoyable for our children. So again, the more you have, the better. And you want to have it as enjoyable as possible and have some planned discussion so that you're just not talking about how was your day, right? To actually give them a topic to really challenge them, because boys really like to be challenged.
Excellent. So I'm hearing you say that family dinners as often as you possibly can, up to at least 5 times in a week, and involved all of the children at the table so that they're involved and not only simple questions about how's your day, but pick something and talk about values and talk about the future and what is it that's going on in school. What I'm hearing you say, engage them. I have one question for you when it comes to family dinners, and that is, so what can maximize and make it even more impactful, especially in these days with smartphones? Do we have any rules around that?
Yeah, so thank you for bringing that up. That's a biggie. I think it kind of goes without saying. TV should be off, smartphones off, and this includes the parents.
Yeah.
So even if there's a phone call, an important one, people need to know that there's family dinner. We're going to have, just like family worship, same thing, to have that uninterrupted time with your children and to carve that out. And it helps them realize that you're important, and then there's less distractions. So you're a good role model. It shows that you care for them, and then there's less distraction. So yes, no technology.
Now, do you think that this is a good time for parents to validate and praise their children, you know, while they're all sitting there in front of one another? Is it worthwhile to do that while you're there at family dinners?
That's the beauty of family dinners. You have this opportunity to converse, to talk. And I remember when I was in school studying adolescent development, I was so surprised at how few minutes parents actually communicate with their teens. It's like just a couple of minutes. And now that I have a teen, I understand. I'm like, okay, I can see, because there's so much in their own world, in their rooms. So having that conversation at family dinners is when we actually can praise our boys. That's one thing my 17-year-old had said, that, you know, we spend so much time and effort on praising our girls and we don't do it enough with our boys. So it's at the family dinners when we have that opportunity, especially when they say they got an A on a test or even a B minus. But hey, if that's a class that they're typically are failing or doing poorly, even a B minus is a good one for them. And you want to praise and encourage them because boys need it too.
That is such a good point. You know, one of the things that we used to do with our kids when they were home is we would also have word of the day. And so that was a little competition for our kids. I mean, we have a girl and a boy, but both of them like a little competition. And we would say, you know, everyone needs to have a new word every day. And again, I think the importance of what you're saying is the no judgment. You know, so sometimes they were a little sneaky and they would find like a four-letter word or something like that, you know, didn't have time to find something else. And it was just a fun thing. And so I would say, okay, well, put your word in a sentence. And so I like the point that you're making, that withhold judgment, praise them, and especially pay attention to the fact that our boys do need to be complimented.
Well, what do you know? We're out of time, but we want to thank you, Dr. Baltasar, for joining us today. As we close today, we do so with God and with the reminder of what God says in the Bible. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And of course, that's found in Jeremiah 29:11. To be sure, God has big plans for our sons, mostly to be shaped into his character and likeness. As parents or guardians, we can surely help guide our boys to become all God wants them to be.
That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.